Hi there, hockey fans, and welcome back to RotoWire's signature NHL Hockey Pod podcast with Statsman and AJ. Friends, I'm Paul Bruno in Toronto, Ontario, and you can follow me at Statsman22. My co-host is AJ Scholes, a great follow all season long at AJScholes24, based in Sun Prairie, Wisconsin. That's very close to RotoWire headquarters over in Madison. We thank RotoWire for their support all season long, as well as our sponsors who have been with us at FanDuel and DraftKings. And we're looking forward today to reviewing the first round of the NHL playoffs and previewing the second round. And my partner AJ is on board. He and I are both suffering the aftermath of grueling Game 7 defeats for our favorite clubs. AJ, your impressions of the first round and overview is what I'm looking for here before we dive into each series.
I mean, you talk about parity in the league, right? You've got five Game 7s, two Game 6s, and then, you know, Colorado did their thing. But other than that, you know, it's just, like I said, really impressive to see how evenly matched everybody is and speaks to, like I said, the parity around the league. I think it was, good first round overall. Really exciting. And, you know, I had a couple people I've seen tweeted or say it, you know, Game 7 in the NHL is better than Game 7 in the NBA. And I think we really saw that on display.
Yeah, there were five games that went to Game 7, four home teams winning them. The only team that didn't was my own favorite, and that's something that I have to chew on for a while still. But you're right. There was a lot of evenly matched clubs. 13 teams made it to the 100-point mark on the season, and we saw more of that parity in the first round, the exception of the walkover by Colorado in their series. So, AJ, let's get into the first round series, reviewing them all, and touch on the top performers, maybe some of the disappointments or surprises contributions in each of those cases before we dive into a second round preview. So with that, we start with our look at the lopsided series of among them all. That was Colorado versus Nashville. Regular season series, Nashville had a 3-1 edge, so some people thought maybe they'd give them a tough fight, but it was pretty much a walkover, wasn't it, pal?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I personally didn't see how any other outcome was going to happen here. You had Saros hurt. You know, Rittich underwhelmed, Connor Ingram comes up and actually looked okay, all things considered. But this Colorado team is just so good. I just didn't expect it to go longer and it certainly didn't. You know, Cale Makar ridiculously among like top five in points, despite only playing in four games. You know, McDavid has 14 in seven games. Makar has 10 and 4. So, just a fantastic start for him to the postseason. And, they really walked all over Nashville here. And I expected nothing less.
Yeah, you mentioned that they could have hung on, made it competitive if they had their starting goalie in the nets. You would have thought maybe Saros could have made a difference. But he can't score goals, and neither can either the other goalies. And so they were limited to only 9 goals for in their series. They gave up 21. So that was kind of a telltale sign. But kudos for Nashville for their pretty strong regular season, I'll say, AJ. And a couple of guys that we've maligned all season long, they managed to have good regular seasons. And Matt Duchene continued with the playoff with 3 goals and 1 helper to lead the club. Jakob Trenin with 3 goals. But beyond that, they were wanting for offense. And on the other side, of course, there was a pile of offense from the expected names that we've talked about all season long. Makar, you mentioned. Nate MacKinnon with 5 goals in the 4 games. Landeskog showed up. Rantanen showed up. Devin Taves is a guy that we've talked a lot about in the last half of this season. And he picked up his offense. He's kind of like Cale Makar light, AJ. So it gives him a really nice second weapon on the blue line that we should really start talking about more and more. And the depth scoring chipped in. So really, this team is loaded for bear. No surprise going forward that they should be favored in every series that they're in the rest of this postseason, I would say. And next series, AJ, go a little deeper dive in Minnesota and St. Louis, because we were on opposite sides of this. And I had St. Louis winning in 6. That's actually the outcome. I'll give you credit for you got the sweep right in the first series. I thought it was being longer, but that was based on my
I don't know what you were watching that you thought that series was going to go 6 games, Paul. That might be one of your worst takes in the history of our show that you thought that was going to be a 6-game series.
Only worst because take. only because I thought Saros was going to be healthy and he might steal one or two. That's the only thing. But once he was on the sideline, I thought, no way, they could put both the other goalies in, and I would have been in your camp too. But I had to stick with my original call based on thinking Saros would show up. However, in St. Louis's series against Minnesota, we were on opposite sides. One of the few series were on opposite sides, and I got this one right. St. Louis in six, Minnesota, you had them in five. Both had them in quick series, really. But give St. Louis credit. They found the goaltending solution in Jordan Binnington. He turned back the clock to what he was a couple of years ago, and he was a difference maker in this series from my perspective. That was one of the big edges. But I'll give you a chance to break down this series first, because I went kind of deep in the last one.
Yeah, I mean, the goaltending is obviously the story here. They went with Fleury for the first five games, Minnesota, that is. Numbers weren't great, 906 save percentage, 3.04 is the goals against average. Decided to switch to Talbot in that last game, and it was a disappointing outing. I mean, four goals allowed on 26 shots, that's less than eight and a half on the save percentage there. But how do you blame the guy, right? You've been sitting for a week and a half now or whatever that was, so hard to really put a ton of blame on him. And then on the opposite side, as you said, Binnington comes in relief there, so to speak. Ville Husso doesn't really do much in the opening series. They're down 2-1. And then Binnington comes in, wins the next three. 1.67 was the goals against average. Just downright dominates, to be frank with it. So I think the goalies were, the story of this one. Obviously, Kirill Kaprizov had himself a solid series, seven goals in those six games. Joel Eriksson Ek picking up five. So they've got some things to feel really good about. In Minnesota, some things to build on. For the Blues, we'll go more in depth as to what the next round looks like. But for this one, David Perron, Ryan O'Reilly leading the way with 9 and 8 points respectively. But again, I think for me, it's going to come down to the goalies really were what decided this matchup. They didn't get enough out of Fleury, and Binnington came in and looked like the Stanley Cup winning version of himself.
Yeah, you touched on the goal scoring thing, and sorry about that. You touched on the goal scoring thing, AJ, and really on both sides of it, it was very concentrated, and so that was a bit of a surprise to me on the St. Louis side. Of course, their depth guys carried the mail. When you consider Perron, O'Reilly, and Tarasenko, they're frontliners on any team. They each got five goals in this series, but they weren't guys that dominated in the regular season. They turned it up in the postseason. Jordan Kyrou added three more, and then beyond that, you were looking at a goal here, a goal there. And then on the flip side, Minnesota, you touched on two of their big scorers led the way there. So the concentration of the scoring was very limited on both sides, I would say. And that was something that we might have expected, but over six games, I'm kind of surprised still that that not too many other guys chipped in with more than one goal for each side. And a testament to how physically this series was played, how hotly contested it was in the six games. But you got to look at some of the star performers here that really lit it up. Kaprizov, you mentioned, seven goals. And I mentioned the three guys on St. Louis with five each, but big drop off on both sides. You think that St. Louis has to get more depth scoring to be a factor in their next series. They're in tough, though, against Colorado. AJ, next up, we take a look at the Calgary Flames and the series that they had against Dallas. It went the distance. Jake Oettinger, really, it was his coming out party, AJ. The reason that this thing extended that far, in my opinion, was his name being front and center in the performances that he gave game in, game out. You and I thought this was going to be a fairly quick series, but it went the distance and largely on his shoulders. But what else did you see from Dallas, and what are your observations from the Calgary Flames in this set?
I mean, not to just keep belaboring the point, but this goaltending here, big factor. I'll start with the Dallas offense. We mentioned Minnesota had Kaprizov with seven goals. And on the other side, the Blues had three guys with five goals. The best that Dallas could muster was Joe Pavelski, picked up three in this one. Now, they had a little bit more depth out of there. You know, Robinson, Hintz, Sagan, Heiskanen, they all scored. Obviously, you know, Jamie Benn, again, 2 points in 7 games, like not good enough, as we've said for a while. John Klingberg, 1 assist over 7 games. Definitely not good enough. Alexander Radulov only played in 3 of them. So really kind of disappointing on that side. But to get to Calgary, you know, you look at Markstrom's numbers, 9.43, the save percentage, 1.53, the goals against average. Those are numbers you would expect like a goaltender to have, you know, sweep or 5, right? That's like a 5-game, you know, numbers. Those aren't the type of numbers that you would expect from a guy that had to play a full 7 games. And to your point, it's because Ottinger on the other side, 9.54 was his save percentage, 1.81 was his goals against average. Those are numbers for a goalie that should have won, obviously. So I think his teammates kind of hung him out to dry in terms of offensive production. Calgary did enough to get through there. They were obviously led by Johnny Gaudreau as they normally are, but even there, you know, Lindholm and Backlund led the way with 3 goals apiece. They're going to need more offense. Again, we'll talk about them more down the road, but they need a little bit more offense, maybe. But Markstrom really a goalie battle that Ottinger just unfortunately ran into a guy playing, you know, really some of the best hockey of his career right now.
Yeah, you look at the goals scored in this series in 7 games played, a total of 29 goals in the series. 15 by Calgary, 14 by Dallas. So razor thin was the difference between the two teams over the 7-game set. And you know what? Jamie Benn did score the go-ahead goal in game one. You would have thought he didn't have a great series, but he was poised to be the hero early on until Calgary came back. And, you know, Johnny Gaudreau, 8 points in the set. When you consider that there were only 15 goals scored, he was in on more than half of them. So that tells you just how much they leaned on that top line. And again, teams that are going to go far, they're going to have to get more depth scoring. So that's something as Calgary gets ready for their next set and hopeful of a longer run. They've got to be concerned about the fact that they didn't get much from their depth players, but at least their signature guy helped lead the way. And you can give credit to all 3 of the top guys on that line. They each got at least 5 points in the series, but I think they got to have more from that second unit. Tyler Toffoli got only 1 goal in this series. Milan Lucic, 1 assist. Andrew Mangiapane, only 1 goal. They've got to do better, and I'll be surprised if they don't against a more wide-open defensive structure that they'll face in the next round. The next set that we're going to look at, AJ, is the first set on the other side. We're going to do Edmonton Oilers against Los Angeles Kings. And during the regular season, the Oilers had their hands full with Los Angeles, and I thought they would again in the postseason. You thought they'd have an easier time. The result was actually another 7-game series, and Connor McDavid warmed up to this occasion big time, in my opinion. But again, I want to defer to you and have you observe what you thought of this series from both sides.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you get fantastic production out of McDavid. I mentioned it off the top that, you know, leading the league right now with 14 postseason points. Leon Draisaitl top 10 as well with 9, despite, you know, some ankle issues that he seems to be dealing with. The team overall in terms of, you know, the power play percentage, pretty solid there, comes in 2nd in the postseason right now at 36.8. Penalty kill numbers, decently good as well at 87.5. So special teams, definitely a big factor for Edmonton. And we for this team, like, you don't need fantastic goaltending. You just need good enough goaltending with the amount of offense they can put up there. So you kind of just hope for the best there that you get what, you know, Mike Smith gives you enough. That's really what it comes down to. And I think overall they got that eventually, for the Kings. Unfortunate that they, couldn't make it through. They definitely made it a series. I think that they had a chance, obviously to get there quick, took all of the starts for them, 904 was the save percentage. You know, Cal Pettersson came in relief and just won game. I was a little surprised that they didn't try something different there and go with Pettersson for a start here. But, you know, Jonathan Quick is the guy with the Stanley Cup ring. So, and I think that's similar to what we saw in Minnesota. They deferred to Fleury because he's got, you know, championships under his belt. And maybe they should have gone to Talbot sooner. And here in LA, maybe they should have looked at Cal Pettersson and kind of put the past in the past here.
Yeah, and we want to spend some time talking about Mike Smith too, AJ, because he was maligned by both of us for maybe the last couple of seasons in Edmonton.
And will continue to be as long as he is in the league.
2.29 the goals against, though, and the save percentage of .938. Those are outstanding numbers. And he allowed 16 goals over the 7 games played. So he certainly did his part and more than I expected. And if he didn't come up that big, I don't think Edmonton wins this series. I'll say that. They did wipe the floor with LA in a couple of games. They outscored them by 10 goals in the series, but there were a number of games that were up for grabs, and certainly Mike Smith was the difference in a number of the wins that they did achieve in those circumstances as well. So Edmonton, they ride the coattails of their team leader, McDavid, and they got a very nice performance out of Evander Kane. This guy is in a prove-it situation, AJ. You wonder what his future looks like in this league, but he certainly did himself a real good service by performing as well as he did in that first round, and he goes hand in glove with Dreisaitl and McDavid as the top three offensive pieces here. But they did get some depth scoring, you know, unlike another bunch of lineups that we've talked about. There were not too many other players that got more than one goal, but let's credit Ryan Nugent-Hopkins and Zach Hyman. 5 points and 4 points respectively, each with a couple of goals as well. So the options were a little bit greater in Edmonton than we've seen in some of the other teams. And they rode the strength of this club, which is the high-octane offense and the big names to this ultimate success in the series. And I don't know if anybody can't be excited about the next matchup against between Edmonton and Calgary. The Battle of Alberta is rejoined. It'll be hotly contested. And I don't think it's going to be a short series. And as long as Mike Smith, though, answers the bell, that gives Edmonton, I think, their best chance to compete in round two. And we'll see how that unfolds. But the Oilers offense carried them. And Connor McDavid looks honestly like a man possessed in these playoffs. And can't wait to see what he brings to the table in the next round. But LA kind of did what we thought they would do. They would check. Philip Deneau playing a strong two-way game, ditto Anse Kopitar, but it was a coming-out party for Trevor Moore and Adrian Kempe, who actually led this team in their offense with 5 and 6 points, respectively. So there is some positive to take away for this team because they added some nice pieces offensively, and I think the future is a little brighter than I would have thought at the beginning of the season for this club. They've started a really good transition, and their veterans are still participating in this group. Anze Kopitar, a lot of mileage left, and I hope they get Drew Doughty back next year for that added look that he would give them on the blue line. But Jonathan Quick turned back the clock and did his thing, and although he was shelled in a couple of games, I thought he represented very well in addition. Let's turn our attention to the other side, AJ, the Eastern Conference, and we'll begin with a look at the Florida series against Washington. Look, you and I both thought that it was going to be a short series. Washington extended it a little bit longer, but we got it all right at the end of the day. Both of us were on the Florida side of this equation. It was a series where it pitted two teams that would score almost the same in terms of the regular season campaign. So there wasn't much to choose from. And I thought the playoff pedigree of the Caps would keep it close, but Florida was something of a juggernaut, AJ, and they looked to be a real tough out going forward.
For me, the story of this one is one goal. Alexander Ovechkin had one goal in 7 games. Now, he certainly helped his teammates, 5 assists. That's just not generally been his game. You know, he is a goal scorer. It's why he's got a chance to catch Gretzky. And so while the assists are great, if you're going to get past any team in the postseason, you know, they need him scoring more goals. TJ Oshie had a fantastic playoff for his part with 7 goals there. If there's a concern and a reason they didn't make it beyond that is that 4 of those 6 goals came on the power play. In fact, 6 of their team total goals came with a man advantage. So pretty heavily skewed towards having that extra attacker. And I think that's ultimately what most led to their downfall here. On the other side for the Panthers, Carter Verhaeghe playing, you know, next level right now in terms of where he's at, and not a guy that you necessarily would expect to be second right in the league in postseason points with 12. That's the kind of thing you need for Florida to obviously get past them. And so, I think they'll continue to do well. They're such a deep team. You know, they may not have the flashiest third line in the league, but their bottom line, the fact that you can scratch a guy like Joe Thornton, you know, Mason Marchment's going to miss the first game with an injury, and really it's not going to cause them much problem because Anthony Duclair is going to jump back into the lineup. And in fact, it looks like even a second line role. So they're just such a deep team that I think that was the problem. They created matchup havoc. Yeah, you let TJ Oshie score, you pretty much bottle up Ovechkin, and that's all you really needed to do against this Caps team.
And AJ, kudos to the Caps for their trade deadline move that brought in Claude Giroux. He was second on the club in scoring in these playoffs with 7 points. Carter Verhaeghe, 12 points, lead all scorers in this round. Alex Barkov, point-a-game guy, 6 points. Aaron Ekblad looked like he didn't miss a beat after being injured late in the season and recaptured his role as a linchpin on the back end with 5 points here. And, you know, this is a team that did it on the same recipe that they did in previous seasons, earlier this season, rather, with the performance that they got out of all their players. The offense was what we expected it to be. And so no surprises there. And it really was too much for Washington to overcome. Although you have to tip your hat to TJ Oshie. He's added another layer to his playoff resume with 6 goals to lead this offense. You mentioned Ovechkin struggled with only one goal on 19 shots, but certainly Oshie did his share and then some. He had an injury-plagued regular season, but showed up as he always does in the postseason. And Nicklas Backstrom, I was glad to see him have a nice series too, AJ, because he had another injury-riddled season too. 6 points for him. Kuznetsov with 5 points. Carlson with 5 points. So the big boys did play for Washington, but they just didn't have enough because we're talking about the highest octane offense on the other side in Florida. The Panthers did get a serviceable series out of Sergei Bobrovsky in the Nets. His goals against came in at under 280, save percentage over 90%. That's pretty much all he needs to do, though, AJ, in order to keep this team competitive. He doesn't have to play at a 940 save percentage clip with the rest of this offense here. You look at the total series, though, and they only outscored Washington by one goal in the overall. So a couple of breaks here and there. We could have been talking about a different outcome. But really and truly, I didn't think Florida was ever going to lose this series, even as it unfolded in the later stages. Did you?
No. I mean, I thought eventually, you know, maybe they would force a game seven or something. But yeah, I was surprised that they made it go as long as it did. You know, I thought probably 5 games was where it would go. So kudos to them for getting that extra game. But yeah, I did not at any point fear that the Panthers were going to drop that series.
And then we come to one of the ones that hurt the most for me, the Leafs falling in 7 games played. You know, when we previewed this series, we both knew it was going to go 7 games. That's just what the Leafs do. And you had the right victor, though. You had Tampa coming out on top. I was holding out hope that the Leafs would eke out the win on home ice. And I told you off the air, I was in attendance in game 7. Very exciting atmosphere. But the boys came up a little bit short against the 2-time defending champions. I have a question for you, AJ. If you watched a bit of this series, I watched every second, of course, but do the Stanley Cup champs look a little vulnerable to you? Or do you think they were just up there against a tough foe and it was a tough battle? I saw that there was missing links there, I thought.
My takeaway from this for the Lightning is that they're a little tired. I mean, they've played more hockey than anybody else over the last couple of years with all the extra games with the postseason. Vasilevskiy, I think, showed it as well. I think maybe if you were going to look at the regular season in hindsight, you maybe would have used Brian Elliott a little bit more to keep Vasilevskiy from playing too many games. Although that is, you know, obviously what he likes to do. He's a heavy game load kind of guy. But I will say, after that game six, starting, you know, third period-ish game six, he looked great. And maybe, you know, is getting back to that form, but we'll have to see. But that was my main takeaway, is that they've kind of felt a little tired heading into the postseason. You know, I think it's why they finished third in the standings. And ultimately, but they seem to have found another gear. You know, obviously, I don't want to take anything away from the Leafs. They have a ton of fantastic, you know, players on that roster, generated plenty of offense. They were never going to make it easy for Vasilevskiy here to win this one. So, you know, unfortunate that they have now lost 10 series clinching games in a row. Against a team that hasn't lost a series since getting swept by the Blue Jackets back in 2019. So they've won 9 series in a row. Leafs just continue to break hearts all over Ontario.
Absolutely, my friend, and mine is still mending. But I have, to your point, I have no quarrel with the way that the top players on the Leafs perform in this series. Auston Matthews with 9 points, Mitch Marner with 8. Willie Nylander even with 7. He's been the subject of a lot of conjecture after the series was over. Is this his swan song in Toronto to get them some salary cap relief? If they do, they're selling high on one of their better players in the offseason. John Tavares started the series slowly, came up big in the last few games. Morgan Rielly was a stud on the back end with 6 points. But for me, it was the third line that was MIA. Ilya Mikheyev got 2 goals. They were both empty netters, and they didn't get anything from Andre Kasha. Michael Bunting was a bit of a no-show, Pierre Engvall. So they needed 1 goal or 2 goals from somebody else other than that top group. But you look at the other side, and you could say the same thing for Tampa. They didn't get much at all from third and fourth line players until the last game. Nick Paul got both goals for them. But otherwise, the bulk of their offense, they scored a total of 23 goals in this series. And there were 6 guys that participated with 7 guys that got 2 goals. 6 of them were the usual suspects. So, again, they didn't get much from the likes of Brandon Hagel. And Corey Perry got a couple of goals in this series. But Anthony Cirelli only had 1. Pierre-Marc Bellemare got 1. They did just enough to win. And so kudos to them for getting that done. But interesting note for me, Steven Stamkos, for all his success in the NHL, he's not scored a goal in Game 7 yet in his career, is what I heard. And I was stunned by that. And he only got 2 goals and 2 helpers and was a -2 on the series. I thought he was a guy that I was expecting more from him. But I'll say this, the captains on both sides, they kind of negated one another. I thought that would be a win for Toronto if Tavares could keep close. In fact, he outscored Stamkos in this set. But Braden Point's health is a point of concern going forward. And we'll see if he can be healthy at the start of the next set. But he's another guy that's a big difference maker that Tampa's going to need more from if he's healthy going forward, AJ. Then we take a look at 2 series in the Metro Division. First one, Carolina against Boston. We thought that it was be a tough competitive series. You got this so going 7 games. I had it going 6. I had the right winning team in Columbus. Carolina, rather, and you had Boston winning in 7. It was a very hotly contested set, though, AJ. We could both agree to that. And one of the outcomes is that we're not sure what happens with Patrice Bergeron. I want to start there because one of the more notable players in the playoffs whose future is a little cloudy right now. Before we break down the series, what's your thought on what happens next for Patrice Bergeron?
Yeah, I mean, based on his comments today as they're, you know, cleaning out the locker room, undecided on whether or not he'll be back next season, but did clarify he would not play anywhere else. So at least Bruins fans don't have to worry, you know, about that happening. So, you know, I don't know. I don't know what to expect out of it. I could definitely see him wanting to make another push for it. Obviously Marchand is still going to be around. So he'll still have his running mate there. It could depend on what they do in the offseason. He may just take some time, think about it, see what they do as far as re-signing guys, adding guys, that sort of thing, and then go from there. But would definitely be weird to see the Boston Bruins without him at center. But, you know, it is coming sooner rather than later, that is for sure.
Yeah, and in terms of breaking down this series, AJ, I think it was just Carolina just having a little bit too much for Boston at the end of the day in terms of the breadth of their offense and how stout their defense played. They got a great series out of Tony DeAngelo, and I thought that was a key difference in the outcome. He had an 8-point set in terms of what he contributed offensively, but he was a stud on their power play, picking up 4 points. That was a factor in this series, and played over 20 minutes a night. Alongside Jacob Slavin was another guy that played a ton in the series. 23 minutes per game was his average. So it was a couple of defensemen that actually led the scoring for Carolina, which was a bit of a surprise for me. And I think that they can count on their offense to deliver more. They got a surprise contribution from Max Domi that we didn't see coming. He got the pivotal goals that won the series in the final game. But all the usual suspects did show up with at least 5 points, 4 points for Nita Ryder, 5 for Aho, 5 for Seth Jarvis. Domi mentioned with 5, Teravainen with 7, and Trocheck with 7. So the big guns did shoot and score for Carolina. They're going to need more of the same going forward. The Bruins, they countered with what you would expect they countered. Their big boys, Marchand, Bergeron, counting for 7 goals between them. Charlie Coyle came up with a couple. Patrice Bergeron, David Pastrnak with 3 goals. Jake DeBrusk with a couple, Taylor Hall with a couple as well. Beyond that, it was bit players and role players chipping in a little bit, but not significant. So the theme of these playoffs, though, it seems like in the first round, a lot of the big guns did deliver, but there wasn't a lot of depth scoring from the bottom 6 players on any team really in the first round, AJ. And that was a telltale sign in this set for the Bruins, as we expected it might be. And good for them, I think, for extending it to 7 games. I didn't think that they had it in them to go that far. But as I know better than anybody, killing the Bruins snake is a hard deal, and Carolina should get a lot of credit for getting it done. And now the last series that we'll talk about, one that's painful for you, but I got to tell you, AJ, the deck was stacked against Pittsburgh when I realized that they weren't going to have their starting goalie in place. They had some injuries up front, and I think they performed heroically in this set. You should be very proud of your team for extending the Rangers to 7 games. You saw it coming. You called the Rangers in 6. I thought it'd be even shorter than that in 5. But, boy, the leadership that they have there in Crosby and Malkin is the envy of almost every team in the league. These guys just, they lead by example. They're warriors, and they showed it once again. So I repeat, I would be very proud of this team if I were you.
That's one way to look at it. admittedly, I tweeted this out a couple times. You know, the Penguins had a 2-0 lead in game 5 with the ability to close it out and clinch, moving on. And then Crosby got hurt. And it kind of spiraled out there. Then game 6, they had a 2-0 lead in that one as well. Weren't able to close it out. Jari comes back for game 7. You know, played really well for a guy that had been out with a foot injury that probably wasn't 100% healed. I mean, there's no way that foot was 100%. You know, that last goal in game 6 that Domingue let in was disappointing at best. I can see your analysis on it, Paul, that I should be proud of my team, but it also feels like the end of an era here, in that I will be surprised if Letang is back specifically. I just don't see Malkin not coming back. Obviously, Crosby is signed for longer, but they've also got, you know, Brian Rust potentially needing a new or not potentially, also needing a new deal here. So it leads into a very questionable offseason as to, you know, what they're going to do, where they go from here. I think if they win this series and then lose, maybe you keep the core together. Obviously, if you go even further than that, you keep them together. But with another first-round exit for the Penguins, which is 3 in a row for them, I believe, even though they made a significantly better showing of this one than previous years, it may be the end of the band being together here. And I think Chris Letang is the most likely player to walk out the door.
Well, AJ, that puts a bit of a bow on the first round. You and I did fairly well with our picks. I had 7 wins and 1 loss with one series where I got the exact number of games correct. You had 6 wins and 2 losses, but you got 2 series with the exact number of wins. So pretty much a wash.
Including the one that you lost, too.
Yes. Well, I got one that you lost, and you got one that I lost. So that's fair, I guess. But in any case, I think we acquitted ourselves well, and we're going to hope to bring you a very accurate assessment of the next 4 series from the second round. We're going to do that, though, after we take this break. We'll be back with our look at the matchups in the next round before we sign off on the second round play, which begins tonight. So stay tuned. We'll be back after these messages. A reminder for how our listeners can stay in touch with us will also be forthcoming as well.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's Unified, UNIFYD, healing.com/BlueWire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE system.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Okay, we are back. And AJ, before we get into the...
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Second round previews. Please remind our listeners how they can stay in touch with us during the course of the playoffs. We're not going to be as regular as once a week, but in terms of our shows, but we'll be back when the third round gets underway. In the meantime, how can our our loyal followers stay in touch with us.
Yeah, absolutely. So if you want to interact with us, talk about games, see what we have to say about these games, although Paul's gone completely silent on social media since the Leafs lost, even skipping our DraftKings show, just Paul couldn't handle it. But if you want to interact with us, the best way to do that is over on Twitter. You can follow me at AJSchultz24. You can follow Paul at Statsman22. If you want to check out this show live and in living color, you can do that via the RotoWire Facebook page. The RotoWire main Twitter account will share that out when we have this. And then, of course, the RotoWire NHL account will also have this. If you want to circle back and rewatch anything, this will be available on the RotoWire Twitter account and Facebook page for longer than that. So plenty of opportunities to see us live and in person. If you are watching it live, either now or in the future, you can comment on the Facebook page there, and we would get your questions and be able to answer those live for you as well. So we're definitely willing to do that if anybody wants to head over there as well.
In my defense, I'm going to say that I've been battling a flu bug, AJ, so that's kind of why I was laying low. But I'll be back on the DraftKings lineup tomorrow.
Day-to-day due to illness, Bruno.
That's out. So I will be in the practice lineup later today, and I should be good to go tomorrow for those people that like listening to me on the DraftKings show alongside AJ. We'll look forward to seeing what's in store for the next round, which begins tonight. And with that, my friend, let's take a look at this series, the series that we see before us, and start breaking them down the same way that we did in the previous round. We talk about the head-to-head record, talk about the net special teams, break down the goalie matchups, the defense pairings, the forwards, power play units, and then our ultimate calls for the series going forward. So with that, we'll start with the Battle of Florida. Tampa and Florida meeting in the playoffs should be a very exciting round. The season series was a head-to-head split, two wins each, and a couple of lopsided scores, one for each team in this whole set, accounting for the rather high goal scoring that we saw. 19 for Florida, 15 for Tampa over those four games. So I think betting the over might be the way to go based on that form chart. And special teams also look forward to bringing a lot of offense to the table when you consider Florida's net power play was 21.4%. Their net PK was 84%. That's a combination of well over 100, and that's also always a good sign. But Tampa's right there too with a 22.2 and 83.3 respectively. So you can expect a lot of offense in this series, I think, particularly as I don't believe Andrei Vasilevskiy is at the top of his game, and I don't have the faith that Sergei Bobrovsky can deliver the goods against a high-octane offense that he's going to face in the series. So I think we're going to see a lot of goal scoring, AJ, and that's my quick thumbtail on the goalie situation. Why don't you give us your thoughts there and then lead us into the defense pairings?
Yeah, I agree. I don't think Vasilevskiy's been at his best. I mean, that's evident. You look, a sub-900 save percentage, 3.04 is the goals against average. But I will say he's not the first goaltender to be shellacked by the Leafs, offensively during the course of the season. So those numbers I would expect to improve facing the Panthers offense, which is certainly capable, but I don't think they're quite at the same level or same caliber as what we saw out of the Leafs offense. In terms of what the blue line looks like for them, it's, you know, the big name is obviously Victor Hedman for the Lightning there. He'll be, you know, kind of your most important guy for them to produce. The rest of their lineup is not, you know, not flashy in terms of what they have offensively. Hedman had 7 points in 7 games to start the series, and a pretty good drop off after that. You know, they have some guys that could play bigger roles, I think. But even, you know, Cal Foote, Ryan McDonagh, not necessarily the guys that you expect offensive contributions from. You maybe want a little more out of Mikhail Sergachev, just 2 points in that first round. On the other side for Florida, a little bit similar. You know, they have a little bit more, I would say, but Aaron Ekblad will be their main piece, 5 points in 6 games. Gustav Forsling, Brandon Montour, again, maybe a little bit more out of Montour, just 2 points in 6 games for him. But basically, you know, structured really pretty much the same. One kind of big offensive piece that'll be on their power play. Quarterbacking that unit will lead most of the defensive scoring by a pretty wide margin, and then just hoping anybody else after that can chip in.
Yeah, you know what? I'm looking for a couple of guys from Tampa to take a step up and be more noticeable offensively. Ryan McDonough is a guy that used to do this on a regular basis for the Rangers, but of course, that job as the number one guy really is in both hands, held very tightly by Victor Hedman. He was outstanding in round number one. But I expect Ryan McDonough's game to take a bit of a step forward now. And Mikhail Sergachev is a guy that really has the spotlight on him. I expected much more from him than what I saw in the first round. He was largely ineffective. He was on the wrong end of hits a lot of the time and didn't really factor into the offense as you suggested. I think it's time for this youngster to take a step and show that he can be at least Victor Hedman light in terms of what he can contribute to the offense. Might maybe be running the second power play a little more effectively. They didn't get much out of that unit at all. And so I think there's three options there on the blue line that they look for, two of them to improve on what they did in the first round and get more of the same from Hedman going forward. And then it's baggage smashers like Foote and Cernak doing what they need to do to keep the front of the net clear for their goalie. On the Florida side, they got what we expected them to get. Aaron Ekblad had delivered more than I thought he would coming back from an injury, AJ. But Gustav Forsling, Brandon Montour, they've been very serviceable in terms of being around the offense for this club. Radko Kudas and Ben Chiarot, tough, tough players to play against. So they've got a little bit of everything that you want in a defense corps. And it bodes well for them that they have a couple of experienced hands in the press box should any injuries come their way. But so far they look like they'll be healthy in that unit. And I think it's almost a wash in terms of what I see on the blue line. In terms of the best player though, I think Hedman is a notch ahead of Aaron Ekblad. So maybe 51 to 49% is the way I'll rate the defense groups there. What about the forward ranks, AJ? I'm going to take us through Florida, and I'll get you to do the Tampa side. Carter Verhaeghe had an outstanding series for them, and he's really formed an outstanding partnership with Alexander Barkov, and it found a home with the two of those guys alongside Claude Giroux, a very formidable forward line. You wonder if Giroux is going to like it enough to come back here next year and be a part of this mix, but if I was him, I'd certainly want to run it back on this club. And second line, Jonathan Huberdeau, he was a little quieter than he was in the regular season offensively. But alongside Sam Bennett and Anthony Duclair, that's a rock-solid second line as well. And third line features Sam Reinhardt, probably the top-scoring threat there. Anton Lundell developed himself into a tough two-way player, and Noah Lachari, no stranger to the rigors of the playoffs. Keeping an eye on Ryan Lomberg, he's a bit of a friend of the family here in Richmond Hill. Grew up in my daughter's grade through school, and he is a fourth-line player that I'll be keeping an eye on. Patrick Hornquist, another fourth line guy who's got a long history in the playoffs and could be one of those guys that comes up with a key goal at some point for the Panthers in this set. They're going to need him to play a tough physical role against the group that Tampa's going to throw out in the fourth line as well.
On the other side for the Lightning in terms of the forward complement, the big question mark is Braden Point. Going to miss game one, won't be available for that. How do they shuffle around from there? Right now, looks like Nick Paul will move to the middle. Alex Killorn and Andre Palat will be on the second line with him. And then Anthony Cirelli moves up to the first line to play with Stamkos and Kucherov. So if that works out for them, if they're able to get by, Nick Paul is going to be just the next in this kind of series of seemingly, kind of mid-range guy, middle six guys that they pick up at the deadline, very similar to Blake Coleman, who was a factor for them. Brandon Hagel has also picked up 4 points. He was another guy that they brought in at the deadline here, and somebody that I don't think a lot of people even thought was available on the market here. He'll kind of center he'll anchor that third line alongside Ross Colton and Riley Nash. And then just a very gritty fourth line, Patrick Maroon, Belmar, and Corey Perry. That's a veteran group that is certainly capable of producing when needed. I wouldn't expect big numbers out of any of those guys, but they will do their job defensively and give, you know, those top three lines the opportunity to get off the ice a little bit. So I love the makeup of this club. Obviously not having Braden Point for any length of time is not going to improve your team. They'll obviously be hoping they can get him back as quickly as game two. But with just, you know, with him out for game one, we'll get, I think more of a look at a guy like Nick Paul and see if he can continue to produce at the level that he already has or even step up further.
AJ, in terms of the way I look at this series, ultimately breaking down, I think that Florida is a team that's on the uptick. Tampa may be slightly on the downturn. Tampa's not lost a playoff series, though, in their last nine series. So I'm not going to sell them short. But I am going to say that I think they're going to have their hands full and they don't have home ice advantage against their cross-state rivals in Florida. The Florida Panthers getting much more fan support than I'm used to seeing as well. So I think things are pointing in the direction of the Panthers to take a bite out of the defending champs and finally unseat them in that role. And we'll have a new Stanley Cup champion. If I got this right, I'm picking Florida to win this series in six games.
Well, Paul, I have continuously ridden the line of until I see otherwise, I'm going to bet on the Lightning. In fact, if you are into sports betting, you can get some pretty good value at the sports book of your choice to get plus value on the Lightning to win this series. I'm going to stick with that. There's no reason to doubt them at this point. Like I said, I think they look a little bit tired. I love their forward depth. Hedman is great, and Vasilevskiy, I think, has another level that he can get to in his game. So I will take the Bolts in seven here. Look, just one series in, we're already disagreeing. Let's see what the other three bring here.
It bodes well. The New York Rangers against Carolina Hurricanes, head-to-head this season, Carolina won this series 3-1. They outscored the Rangers 14-10. Special teams also look good for both teams here. The Rangers, 24.3 net power play, 85.8 net shorthanded, one of the better shorthanded clubs in the league. But look at the other side, Carolina. Their power play was fairly effective at 20.7 net, but their penalty killing was almost 90% net all season long. So it'll be interesting to see how those special teams look against one another. And big key, I'll start again with the goaltending look. Freddie Anderson still not healthy for Carolina at this point. I wonder if we're going to see him in this series, AJ. I think we're going to need to see him in the series for Carolina to put their best foot forward. They've kind of got this far on the strength of the rest of their team. They got decent performances out of Antti Raanta in round one, but boy, oh boy, he's the second best goalie in this series by a long shot, I think. And wonder what you know about the Freddie Anderson circumstance more than I do at this stage. It's very clouded in uncertainty.
Well, the issue is that they're not going to give any more information. They basically, Rob Brind'Amour has basically said, like, until he's on the ice, we don't have an update. And that is just the stance that they're taking. So we have no real indication if Freddie Anderson is going to be back in a month, in 2 days, you know, when they're not giving any sort of update, if or when he'll get back on the ice. So really, that's all that we have to do is just wait and see. If he takes the ice, then things become a decision. So until then, it's going to be Antti Raanta for sure. And even once Freddie Anderson does get back in action, there's no clear timeline established as of now as to when he might supplant Raanta. You would imagine once healthy, he would, but there's no guarantee that, you know, he might have to practice for another week before he would even get in. So at this point, assume Antti Raanta is the starter until told otherwise.
All right, let's break down the defense corps. I'll start with the Rangers. I'll get you to respond with Carolina, AJ. In terms of the New York look, Adam Fox has continued to do what Adam Fox has done all season long, and that's represented both ends of the ice, had an outstanding season and a good first round as well. But Jacob Trouba is a guy that's really elevated his game in the late stages of the season and had a very nice first round as well. So pretty good 1-2 punch there on the back end on the right side of the Rangers' blue line. And keep an eye on the left side because I really like the upside for Keandre Miller. He's a youngster who is showing very well in flashes, and I think he's going to be a fixture on this blue line. They've got a really nice look with him and Ryan Lindgren out rounding out the top four here. And then they've got a veteran in Justin Braun, who anchors the third line, third pairing with youngster Braden Schneider, who is only 18, 19 years old and fresh out of the draft at the end of last season. I think this guy's got a tremendous upside to his future, and coming along and getting a real good baptism here alongside a veteran like Braun is a very nice situation for him. The Rangers have a solid, solid defensive structure from the forwards through the defense and into the nets, and good insulation for a guy like Braden Schneider to get his feet wet here. But I think the Rangers have a very nice looking defensive core.
Well, it's pretty good looking on the other side as well with Carolina here. You mentioned off the top, D'Angelo and Slavin both with 8 points leading the way offensively for the Hurricanes. I haven't decided if that's because they're playing so well or if there's a concern here for the Hurricanes forwards that the defensemen are the guys producing. What's nice for Carolina, though, is that D'Angelo is getting his points on the power play, 4 of 8 coming with the man advantage, while Slavin primarily producing 5-on-5. So it's a really nice combination for them to have. And that figures to be pretty much the entire driver for their offense, at least from the blue line here. Brady Skea is capable, but hasn't really shown much right now. Brendan Smith, Ian Cole, those are more, defensively minded guys. Ethan Bear could be a factor as well. They might switch in and out, move some guys around if they need to. Brett Pesce, pretty much unseen here, 2 points. Again, a guy that you maybe would expect a little bit more out of, generally a 20 in between that, like high teens, high 20s fantasy or point production during the year. You would expect a little bit more than just 2 points in 7 games. But overall, I think the defensive core in Carolina looks really, really good.
And AJ, why don't you double down and then go get us a look at the Rangers forward lines, and I'll take care of the Carolina offense.
Yeah, I think the biggest X factor here for the Rangers is going to be their young line of Alexis Lafreniere, Philip Hedel, and Kaapo Kakko. They have just – their point totals aren't outrageous, but they are so skilled that I'm not sure that Carolina has a line that can match up with them super well. And we saw this against the Penguins. They kind of go out. They create havoc using their speed. Again, not necessarily getting point production at a super high level, but it's not like they've been blanked either. They've been able to produce offensively as well. So I think that could be the line that tips the scales for them. Obviously, they're led by the Kreider, Zibanejad and Vetrano line. Those guys are going to produce the most points for them. That shouldn't come as any surprise. They have in the postseason. Mika Zibanejad, 11 points. Chris Kreider, 5 goals for 7 points. Getting good numbers out of that second line. Panarin and Kopp both with 6. Strom with 7. Strom with 6. So they have 2 really good lines. So for me, the difference maker is that third line ultimately, when you try and figure out how you're going to match up against it. And then honestly, getting Tyler Mott back in the lineup seemed like a relatively minor addition, but he played in games 6 and 7, definitely a huge factor on the penalty kill, dished out a lot of hits. And so I think that's maybe an undersold addition to their team, that they got him back from injury and he can be a huge factor on the PK.
And then I look at the Carolina side, AJ, and they are kind of the darlings of the new wave of stats and puck possession. They get a lot of shots on goal with this group, but they've thrown their lines in a bit of a blender in the postseason, from what I expected it to see. They've changed things up. They've taken Teravainen off of Aho's line, and they've got Svechnikov in there. He did very well in that role down the stretch. And in the first round, Seth Jarvis filling in on that unit. The second grouping, Vincent Trocheck's the guy that I've had a lot of time for. People that listen to our show regularly realize that I'm a big fan of this guy's two-way game, prototypical strong puck mover on the second line that you like to see, and a pretty good place for Tara Vinen to land on his wing as the trigger guy there. But Max Domi could maybe the wild card of this group. If he can build on what he did in Game 7 and be representative in a top six role, that could be a real nice bonus for Carolina and extend their offense to a bit of a different look. The third line over here, a critical one as well. You know better than anybody that Jordan Staal can be an impact player at both ends of the ice and ideally suited to a third line role here. And he'll factor in the shorthanded situations as well for this club. But he'll get the most out of line mates Jesper Fast and Nino Niederreiter as their defensive conscience, allowing these guys a chance to freewheel a little bit more offensively. And that could be a nice thing for Carolina and make this a surprisingly strong contributing third line. And they also have the luxury of Martin Netzkatch, who's played top forward line or top 6 minutes here all season long and moved up and down the roster. He's now relegated to a fourth line role alongside Jesper Kotkaniemi. So that's a luxury that this team has, that they can actually put two guys that are offensive threats out there on a fourth line and not hurt themselves defensively either. Steven Lorenz rounds out that contingent. Jordan Martinuk, the only injured component among the forward ranks, and Derek Stepan, a bit of a role player there too, who might see some time in place of Lorenz. I would think they would go for a veteran look on that fourth unit. So some options for Carolina, but really, if they're to do damage in this series, it's their offense that's going to have to win this matchup outright against the New York Rangers, in my opinion. AJ, when you look at this series, how do you break it down? I mean, you are obviously got a real good look at the Rangers in the last series. But I think they have an edge in the nets. They have an edge maybe in terms of the defensive structure. But I think I give a slight edge to Carolina's offense here. How do you see this playing out?
I mean, I think I got to give the edge to the Rangers overall. You know, Antti Raanta had a really good series, but I just don't have faith that that's going to hold. Eventually, somebody's going to get to him. You know, he's in my opinion, at least he's not an every night starter. And eventually they're going to be able to get some goals there. Shesterkin appears to have bounced back after getting the hook in two of those games against the Penguins. So I've got the Rangers in seven here. I think it'll be a close tight series. But I do think the Rangers can come out on top.
Yeah, I think the goaltending is a big deciding factor for me, too. And I think Shesterkin's worth a game for them in this set. And that's why I only go a little bit shorter than you and say the Rangers in six. And I think that they are going to be a scary team as long as they got Shesterkin playing. He's got to play better than he did against the Penguins, though. I'll say that. And I think he finds his groove in this set and is a difference maker against Raanta. I don't expect that we'll see Freddie Anderson in this series, unless it's very late stages and a change in momentum circumstance arises. But I just think that the Rangers have a little bit too much going for them right now. And boy, it's pretty exciting watching games at Madison Square Garden when the home team is playing well. I think that's a really nice atmosphere that's back in the playoff mix. And I like seeing it. I got to say that. St. Louis and Colorado, this is a rematch from what we saw last year, AJ. And I remember that I thought that Colorado would have a tough time with the Blues last year, and I didn't think that St. Louis was the favorite or anything like that. And the season series this year was a tight one between the two teams. It was Colorado winning two of the three games. St. Louis was outscored by only one goal in the three games. Special teams was also something where St. Louis had a bit of an edge on Colorado on the season. When you look at it, it might be a surprise to our listeners when you consider the net power play for St. Louis was 24.9%, the net power play for Colorado 22.2%. The net PK also in favor of St. Louis, 88.2% and 82.2% for Colorado. Something of a surprise, I would admit, across the board there. So St. Louis is going to be a tough out, I think, but I still lean in favor of Colorado. I think that's pretty much the consensus in the industry. But boy, I've been touting this team as a tough out in the last 5-6 weeks of the regular season. They had an outstanding first round. I'm thinking Colorado is not too thrilled about having to face this team with this playoff hardened pedigree in this round, but it'll be a good challenge. Colorado has to be feeling good about their game, and I think they should be favored significantly. But when you look at the goaltending mix, AJ, the fact that Jordan Binnington has rediscovered his game, does that throw a bit of a kink in your analysis in terms of the goalie matchup against Darcy Kuemper?
It does not. To be blunt, it does not. I think Kuemper has the edge. You know, he missed those couple of games after that scary eye injury. But before that, 9.34 was the save percentage. 1.63 was the goals against average. He was playing really well. And to be frank, better than he even needs to. With the offense in front of him, this is not a guy that needs to be perfect. I think as long as that goals against average hangs right around 2, he should be fine. Anything better than that is just bonus here. And, you know, to your point, Paul Binnington came in, looked pretty good in the 3 games that he played. 9.43 was that save percentage again. So, you know, going to be the starter, we assume, for game 1, of course. Why would you take a guy out on a 3-game winning streak? And I think he's probably even earned himself some leeway if he does lose a game or two. I would be surprised unless he comes out and just got absolutely like shellacked. I would guess that they'll probably use him for a little bit and hold off on Husso. But I think it's pretty clear to me that this matchup favors, in terms of the goaltending matchup, favors Colorado and Darcy Kuemper.
Yeah, and I'll take us into a look on the defense on the St. Louis side, AJ, because there's a couple of injury notes that make this a bit of a mismatch where it could otherwise be a very tight matchup. Torrey Krug missed the last few games of the last series, and he's looking like he's not going to start in round 2 either. He needs a bit of rehab to get well, and not close to starting is what we're looking at right now. Ditto for Marco Scandella, so missing 2 pieces on their 6-pack on defense, a real issue for the Blues. You need all your best players to be going to really kind of almost hope to level the field in what might have been an area of equality between the 2 teams. But that puts more pressure on the remaining Blues players, and a trio of them are guys that are really the focus here, the veterans on the back end that have the offensive upside. I'm talking about Nick Leddy, Colton Pareko, and Justin Falk. Falk had a very nice second half to the season, a very good first round, and he's going to need to be heroic in this round to kind of narrow that gap between what St. Louis will trot out offensively and in a 2-way game and on the special teams against what Colorado does on a nightly basis. We talked about their studs, and you'll get into them in a second here, AJ, but real pressure on these 3 guys to deliver the goods in St. Louis and kind of narrow that gap between what Colorado will throw out, and they round out their squad with the likes of Callie Rosen, Nico Mikkola, and Robert Bertuzzo, guys that are more noted for the defensive side of the puck and bringing some physicality there. So real pressure on the St. Louis D-Corps, missing those 2 key pieces is the storyline for me.
Well, I agree that that's certainly a factor and makes this skew heavier in Colorado's favor. But even if Torrey Krug's playing, the best defenseman in this matchup is on Colorado in Cale Makar. And really, you know, Devin Toews, who we talked about earlier, has looked really good as well. When you have a team that's got guys like Landeskog, MacKinnon, and Rantanen, to have Makar and Toews in your top 5 scorers during a playoff series is a pretty nice spot to be in. You know, they have a couple other guys, and Samu Girard can contribute offensively when needed. He's got 2 assists. Eric Johnson actually picked up a trio of assists. That's a bonus spot. He's not somebody you generally would expect to produce a lot offensively. Josh Manson, Bowen Byram will round out the group. Both of them, Byron especially, have some offensive upside. So really a very offensively minded group, but also defensively solid. Like nobody you know, goes too far in that group, in my opinion. And if they need to, I know he's been maligned in some other stops, but Jack Johnson is certainly capable of being a 15 to 18 minute guy if you want a little bit more shutdown than what's being offered out there. You know, he's somebody that can play and has a high caliber of game if needed. So I think it heavily skews in favor of Colorado with Krug out. I think even with Krug playing, it still skews in favor of Colorado. This is just a position, such a strong position of strength for the Avs here.
Yeah, I would agree with you on that assessment, AJ. In terms of the forward ranks, let me take us into a look on Colorado. Of course, we know the name recognition types here, McKinnon, Rantanen, and Landeskog leading the way. They've got Landeskog lining up on a second-line unit. They've mixed things up to spread the wealth a little bit, and the beneficiary there has been Valeri Nichushkin. He's really taken the next step in his development. We touched on it often during the course of the year, and he'll be the sneaky good value play in DFS if you're looking for that in the postseason alongside McKinnon and Rantanen. Rounding out the second line with Kadri and Landeskog on an effective second line is Arturi Lehkonen, a pickup at the trade deadline from Montreal. He's been fitting in like a glove here and really rounding out the top six in fine style. That affords them the luxury of dropping a guy like Andrei Burakovsky down to a third line and spreading the offense alongside J.D. Compher and Nicholas Aubé-Kubel, who you know a little bit about with his time in Pittsburgh and other stops before he came into Colorado.
He was a Flyer, not a Penguin. I don't want anything to do with that bum.
Okay, very good. I had the right state of Pennsylvania. Anyway, the three forward lines, credible offensive pieces there, and they've even got some threats on the fourth line when you consider Nico Sturm, Logan O'Connor, and Darren Helm for kind of transition-type play. And so, really, a lot of depth and quality in the top six for sure, and even a wild card performer like Andrei Burakovsky could be a very big difference maker for Colorado's offense here. What will they face when you're talking about the depth on the St. Louis side, AJ?
Well, I mean, from a high level, nothing says lack of confidence in your forwards when you're skating seven defensemen, even when Krug and Scandella are out. Like, you have arguably your best defenseman is out and you're still putting seven defensemen on the ice night after night. That doesn't speak too well about the depth among your forward group. Top heavy is the word I would use to describe them. They got really good series out of David Perron, 5 goals, Ryan O'Reilly, 5 goals, Tarasenko, 5 goals. Those three guys doing their part. I would even put Jordan Kyrou in that group. He had 4 points in their 6 games. But then after that, you know, so you've got those four guys producing goals. After that, it's Parayko, Saad, Letty, and Bozak, each with one. So not a particularly deep forward group. I think that's going to be a significant problem for all the reasons that you highlighted for Colorado, that their forward complement was quality. It's a one-trick pony, in my opinion, for the St. Louis Blues. They've got Perron, O'Reilly, and Tarasenko. A lot of that production is probably going to come from the power play. In fact, more than half of both Perron and O'Reilly's points came with the man advantage. So they're heavily skewed that way as well. And I just don't see them matching up well with Colorado.
And that takes us to the predictions of the series. AJ, I'll start first. And I think I'm picking Colorado. I'm going to give it 6 games only because I like the top three lines in St. Louis a lot. And I think they're going to give the Colorado club a bit of a handful in terms of the physical style of play. And I think they'll find a way to steal one more game that you might expect. So taking Colorado in 6, I don't think it'll be in a series that's in doubt, but it'll be a little tougher than the first round, I'm thinking.
Yeah, I don't see Colorado losing at home is really what this comes down to for me. So I'm envisioning them taking the first two at home. They'll steal one in Colorado in games 3 and 4 and then seal it up in game 5 at home. So I've got the Avs winning in 5 games here.
And that takes us to the last series, one that is hotly anticipated north of the border here in Canada. AJ, we talk about the Battle of Alberta, maybe the signature matchup among Canadian teams that we can anticipate in the playoffs when it comes along more than any other. Battle of Ontario, we haven't seen it for a while. And
I didn't even realize that was a thing. Ottawa's been so bad for so long.
Yeah, that's right. And the Leafs walked all over them. When they did make the playoffs, the Leafs won all 4 series that they had head-to-head, but it's been a long time. So Calgary and Edmonton, head-to-head matchup, a lot of excitement here in Canada. And in the regular season, AJ, they split the season series of 4 games, a couple of high-scoring game victories for each side. In the set, the series was decided by 1 goal in terms of total goals. Calgary outscoring Edmonton 17-16. All of that implies that we could see a pretty close series. And again, there's not much to choose from in the special teams. Calgary's a net 21.6 on the power play, net 86% on the PK. Edmonton 23.4, slightly better power play, but a slightly worse power PK at 83.7. Break down the goalie mix, AJ. I know that you're going to speak glowingly of Mike Smith, who is narrowly the second best goalie in the series against Jacob Markstrom.
Not even close. I mean, I will give Mike Smith some credit. You look at save percentage in that seven game series, 9.38 is pretty good. 2.29 goals against average is solid. So he had a good series. There's no arguing that. But Markstrom looked even better. 9.43 save percentage, 1.53 the goals against average. Really, the only player that came close, I think, to matching him in the first round is the guy beat Jake Oettinger. So for me, you know, Markstrom should be the favorite between these two. You factor in, you know, 9 shutouts during the regular season that led the league. So this is a guy certainly capable of, you know, quote unquote, stealing a game if needed. So I just think Markstrom is playing, you know, some of the best hockey of his career. Mike Smith goes through these stretches, right? I'll say something bad about him. He'll play good for a while. You'll give me crap about saying bad things about him. And then he'll start playing bad again. And I'll say, look, Mike Smith is not as good as everybody wants him to be. So we're in an upslope right now. We're in a Mike Smith upslope. But I do think the downturn will happen sooner rather than later. And Markstrom has just been so good all year.
AJ, let me take us through the Edmonton defense, and you can counter with the Calgary group. The Edmonton defense, not with the pedigree of Calgary. They're not playing with the defensive structure that the Flames will trot out night in, night out. But there is some star quality here to watch for. Darnell Nurse may be the best player that the Oilers will throw out other than their first top three forwards in this series. He's elevated his game, and he's a very physical player. He's got offensive upside, but he's playing a little tougher defensively as well that I've noticed, and that bodes well for the Oilers. He's going to be a workhorse in this set, needs to play about upwards of 25 minutes a night, I think.
Let me interject there. He needs to be on the ice. That's rule number one with Darnell Nurse. We avoid any more suspensions. That would probably help as well.
No question about that at all. It's a key. I mean, we didn't mention that with Nazem Kadri. Kudos to him for staying active throughout the first series in Colorado as well. But Nurse needs to be on the ice, needs to be active at both ends of the ice, dominating to help Edmonton's cause. Cody Ceci picked up an important goal for them in the first round, but he's the foil for Nurse in terms of the maybe defensive conscience of that pairing. Duncan Keith insulating Evan Bouchard, who's taken a next step in his development. I like the fact that they've got the defensive conscience of Keith alongside the youngster who's taken a next step in his development. And on the third pairing, we're kind of seeing the same thing where we have a freely wheeling offensive type in Dyson Barry and Brett Kulak, one of the big baggage smashers that Edmonton will throw out there and keep the front of their net clear and be kind of alongside Mike Smith in the crease area, making it difficult for oncoming Edmonton forwards. Tyson Barry needs to be a big factor here on the special teams as well. He's got that big shot on the power play, and maybe if he can be effective, he can spell Nurse and take away some of his ice time in that role and afford him more of an opportunity to impact the game defensively. I think that's a key for Edmonton's makeup of their six pack. They've got a seventh guy in Chris Russell who will be active and maybe in a fourth line role offensively, but more likely to be that seventh defenseman that they'll use in this playoff series.
Well, for the Flames, side of the blue line here, number one is the health of Chris Tanev. He missed game 7 with an undisclosed injury. No real immediate news as to whether or not he'll be ready for the second game series or not. Not an offensive producer, but obviously a player that needs to be on the ice, plays big minutes for them. On the year, averaged just north of 20 during the regular season, played all 82 games. So this is a huge factor guy for Calgary. You know, the lack of offensive production is kind of the story for this Calgary blue line. You've got Michael Stone leading the way with 3 points, and he only played in 4 games. Rasmus Anderson had 2, Zadorov 2, Shillington, who's a player we talked about a lot during the regular season for his offensive upside, had just one. Noah Hanifin with just one. So they're going to need somebody to step up. I don't know who that's going to be totally honest with you. They can't have Michael Stone leading the defensive scoring if they want to move on here. They're going to need to get a little bit more. I think they have a really strong forward group. We'll get into that here in a second. But ultimately, one of the keys, I think, for the Flames is figuring out who can produce from the blue line for them.
Well, AJ, I want to take us into a discussion about the Edmonton forwards here, because there's something that I don't like about their setup right off the top. Offensively, Connor McDavid, we've said that he's had an outstanding first round of the playoffs. He doesn't need Leon Draisaitl playing on his wing in the way he's going right now. I'd rather see Draisaitl drive a second scoring line. That's no offense to Ryan Nugent-Hopkins in that role, but I think you've got to split up the two big boys in Edmonton and give Calgary something more to worry about, because they'll put their toughest checkers on those two guys, and then Edmonton's going to have a bit of a problem. So I'd like to see them switch things up from what we're seeing here. But at the moment, it looks like Draisaitl's lining up as a left winger on that top unit. And the main beneficiary there is Kyler Yamamoto, who's had a nice first round and looks like a very smart DFS value play, as long as he's playing with the two big boys. But I'd like to see them shuffle that thing around. They have another three guys on the forward mix that will be a factor in the second scoring line, or possibly moving one of them into the first line. Evander Kane, we mentioned how he had an outstanding first round. And he's partnered with Ryan Nugent-Hopkins and Zach Hyman on that second unit. So that top six looks very effective to me, but I'd like to see Draisaitl in that second line center slot, AJ. What do you think about that before we move on to the rest of the Oilers makeup?
Yeah, I mean, I do think I like that as well, in part because I think the moving Ryan Nugent-Hopkins to third line center could be a matchup issue for Calgary. So I agree. I think you should probably break those guys up. If you want them to play together, they get plenty of time on the power play together. I don't know that they need to be playing together at 5-on-5 either. The one caveat I'll say is maybe it's a way to kind of limit what they're asking Draisaitl to do because of that ankle injury. So maybe that's a factor here.
And we'll round out the look at the squad. You mentioned Nugent-Hopkins could drop down to a third line role. It'll depend on Draisaitl's wheels too, for sure, no question. But I just don't like him on the first line with McDavid. He can help a second line more than be the wingman on the captain's unit. Zach Cassian, Ryan McLeod, and Jesse Puljujärvi on the third line there. A little bit lacking in terms of offensive upside, but there's certainly the physicality there with McLeod and Cassian could be a problem for Calgary, but it also points to a lack of depth for the Oilers, I think, as long as they go with this current makeup. And the fourth line, Derek Ryan, Josh Archibald, just veteran pluggers, placeholders alongside Derek Brassard, who might get a look there as well. And maybe Devon Shore gets a look in addition, but not much scoring from the bottom six here in Edmonton. So the top six guys really got to carry the mail here. And I think Calgary has a bit of an edge when you consider what they'll be throwing out offensively.
Well, I think the makeup here for Calgary is pretty much similar in terms of being top heavy here. You look at a first line of Johnny Gaudreau, Elias Lindholm, and Matthew Tkachuk, and that was the driver of their offense. You know, 8, 6, and 5 points across the board for those guys. They've got a second line of Backlund, anchored by Backlund, Tyler Toffoli, a little bit underwhelming, I would say, during the playoffs here, just 2 points. The concern for me is the depth, and this is why I think you move Ryan Nugent-Hopkins to that third line. The third line for the Flames, Kelly Yarncroc, Dylan Dubé, and Blake Coleman, a combined 2 assists and no goals in that first-round series. Now, some of that, obviously, as we talked about, is due to Jake Oettinger and how well he played. But it would be a major concern to me as a Flames fan that third line is producing so poorly right now. And it's not like they have options. I mean, we're talking about Edmonton, right? They can make a third line if they want to kind of move some guys around. They have options here. I don't really know that Calgary has much of an option. You're not going to put Milan Lucic up there, Brett Ritchie, Trevor Lewis. None of those guys are going to move into a top six role. I don't know if Tyler Toffoli would be capable of carrying a line. He hasn't really been playing well lately. and you'd be foolish to break up that top line. So I just don't know that Calgary has options here. Not that I don't like their first line, but that third line is a matchup problem if Edmonton figures out that aspect and gets, you know, breaks up Draisaitl and McDavid.
AJ, this series will come down to physicality for me. I mentioned that McDavid's playing like a man possessed. If they can find a way to slow him down and get him involved in this, their preferred grinding style of play, I think that's a big advantage for Calgary. But it's getting him into that lane that's going to be a real challenge for the Flames because he's elevated his game so much. I still think Calgary has a little bit too much in the net and on defense for the Oilers in this set. And I'm going to give the Cowtowners the advantage in the series in a six-game series, but can't wait to see it unfold. And I wonder what you think about the matchup overall.
Well, I do think this is the most exciting matchup of the four. It's the one that I'm most intrigued to watch. It's going to get chippy. It's going to get aggressive, and it's going to be a lot of fun here. For me, I think it comes down to you've got the unmovable object in Jacob Markstrom against the unstoppable force of McDavid and Draisaitl, and that's going to be the key to this one is how well can Markstrom stymie those two guys. If he can limit how many points they produce, he's got enough offense behind him to come out on top. I expect a seven-game series that'll go the distance here, but I do have Calgary coming out on top in that game seven.
So we have agreed on three of the four sets. The only one we disagree on is Florida and Tampa. Let's see. I'll be curious to see how that goes, partner. But we conclude our look at the second round today, and we'll watch with great interest over the next couple of weeks, and we'll be back with our listeners for round three and with any other news stories that come out. We're probably going to talk about coaching changes and off-ice stuff, maybe some trophy news between now and then. I'll close with one topic, AJ, in terms of one of the coaching moves that we saw. Pete DeBoer lost his job in Vegas, and I can't say that was a bit of a surprise to me at all. I didn't think he was a very good pick there in the first place, I'll say that, because he was almost the enemy of the state there with the previous team that he was with. And I know there's people that have been very vocal of that hiring and just as vocal about the firing. So your thought on the DeBoer situation before we sign off this week?
Yeah, I was confused why he was hired, as you were. Honestly, it felt like a slap in the face to the previous coach that had called DeBoer a clown. I think it was Gerard Gallant of the Rangers called DeBoer a clown, and then you fire Gallant and bring in DeBoer on the back of what? Like, it's not like the Sharks had looked really good the season before. I didn't care for the hiring. Now, look, I am one that always, always advocates for new faces, new coaches coming in. Yeah. I don't like the recycled coaches. Having said that, if they could bring in Barry Trotz, I think that would be a fantastic hiring by them. I did not think that him getting let go in Long Island made a ton of sense. They are doing what I always advocate for. Lane Lambert going to get the job there on Long Island. So I like the hire there. If you were going to get rid of Trotz, I'm not sure getting rid of Trotz was the right choice, though. So in the rare circumstance, I would like, you know, if I'm a Vegas fan, I think it would be a good move to go out and get Barry Trotz.
Well, and I'm hoping that he comes to Toronto. I'm looking for a change here in the coaching ranks, AJ. So that makes Barry Trotz one of the most sought-after free agents that we'll be talking about this summer. Remains to be seen how that unfolds. But
a native, if I'm not mistaken, a native of Winnipeg. The Jets have an open coaching opportunity there as well, so he could coach in his hometown, if I'm not mistaken. I believe Barry Trotz from the Winnipeg area.
I believe you are correct, sir. And there's been plenty of news and rumors that we'll talk about off the ice, as well as our look at the third round. I'm looking forward to that. So we just gave you a taste of it. And a fine place to wrap it up, our Series 1 preview, Series 2, Series 1 review, Series 2 preview, I should say. And we hope you've enjoyed this episode of Puckcast with Statsman and AJ. In the meantime, as always, please remember to send your comments, your questions on Twitter. Follow me, Paul Bruno, at Statsman22. And you can follow AJ at AJShows24. As always, we invite you to listen in to Puckcast to get our tips, stay out of the competition in your fantasy hockey and planning and research. Stay well and enjoy the second round, everybody.